This is a Battle of Britain podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum.
Douglas Robert Stuart Varder was born in London on February 21st, 1910. His parents intended to live permanently in India, but were there for just a few years. Varder's father, Major Frederick Roberts Varder, saw action in World War I and died of a war injury in 1922. This loss affected the family's circumstances, and Douglas did not have the education that was intended for him, and which his brother Derek was already receiving. He excelled at sports, though, and won a scholarship to St. Edward's School in Oxfordshire. Varder's aunt was married to Flight Lieutenant Cyril Berg, who was the first adjutant at the RAF College in Cramwell. Douglas was able to see aircraft at close quarters and was absolutely fascinated by them and determined to become a pilot. He won a cadetship and joined the college in September 1928. The college environment suited Douglas very well. He enjoyed the camaraderie and was able to excel at sports. He learned to fly on an Avro 504N trainer, and on February 29, 1929, he made his first solo flight. At the end of his course at Cramwell, Varder was placed second overall, just avoiding winning the Golden Sword, which was awarded to the very best cadet. He was commissioned and joined 23 Squadron as a pilot officer, reporting for duty on the 25th of August 1930. On the 14th December 1931, whilst on a flight with his squadron from Kenley to the Reading Aero Club at Woodley, Varder rolled his Bristol Bulldog at low altitude. The left wing touched the ground and the aircraft crashed. Varder's right leg had to be amputated above the knee. His left leg was amputated below the knee. His flying career seemed to be over, and Douglas Varder began working in the aviation department of the Asiatic Petroleum Company. Unable to seek the thrills of aerobatic flight, he took to driving cars, quickly, and with the same disregard for his safety, or the safety of others. In 1933, Varder married Thelma Edwards. He was 23 years old. He had no intention of giving up flying, and in fact he took the controls of an Avro 504 just 9 months after losing his legs. British aircraft tended to have hand-controlled brake systems, with American aircraft tending to have pedal brakes. This was the only problem Varder had during retraining, especially when he was assessed in a Harvard trainer. Between September 29, 1939, and October 24, 1940, Varder flew several passenger flights, albeit as a second pilot. As war loomed, Varder attempted to get back into the Air Force, and after the end of the Munich Agreement in April 1939, Sir Charles Portal, the Air Member for Personnel, agreed to allow Varder to return to flying duties if his doctors would allow it. They did, and after a refresher course, Varder was assigned to 19 Squadron at RAF Duxford. The squadron was, at the time, the most experienced Spitfire squadron, as they had been flying the new fighter since 1938. The adjustment to working with people who'd once been his equal, but were now more experienced, wasn't easy, and Varder requested the opportunity to command a squadron flight when a vacancy at 222 Squadron became available. Trafford Lee Mallory, the air officer commanding, agreed, and it was as flight commander of 222 that Varder scored his first victory, destroying an ME-109 and damaging an ME-110. Most who worked for him in the early days weren't particularly surprised when a reckless stunt seemed to mean the end of Douglas Varder's flying career. Later accidents didn't prevent Varder from being promoted to flight lieutenant, and when a squadron needed a commander who could shake up their flagging morale, Air Vice Marshal Trafford Lee Mallory chose Varder. 242 Squadron had fought in the Battle of France, and the experience had left the men despondent. Varder's promotion was a surprise, not least to those eligible candidates who were passed over, but accounts of his command show that his single-mindedness worked very much in his men's favour, as he was willing to take their side. He would also get what he wanted, even if he didn't always go through the proper channels. On the day before the start of the Battle of Britain, 242 Squadron became fully operational. The air defence of Southeast Britain was divided into three groups, 10, 11 and 12 Group. Number 10 Group was to the west of London, extending to the coast. Number 11 Group encompassed London and the area to the south, Suffolk, Essex and Kent. And Number 12 Group was Norfolk, all the way up to Lincolnshire. Air Vice Marshal Keith Park was the air officer commanding of 11 Group. Air Vice Marshal Trafford Lee Mallory was the air officer commanding of 12 Group. Park and Lee Mallory were at loggerheads over the way the battle was being fought. Park argued that Lee Mallory's 12 Group were not providing sufficiently for the defence of airfields throughout the southeast. Lee Mallory and Douglas Bader had devised a fighter strategy which involved multiple squadrons of aircraft in a big wing. Park believed that these large accumulations of fighters from several squadrons were difficult to manage. The disagreement between these two men is one of the controversies surrounding the Battle of Britain. It has been covered briefly in the podcast Dowding, Architect of Victory, and will be the subject of a future RAF Museum podcast. Bader ended the Battle of Britain as one of the highest scoring aces, having shot down 23 aircraft. He was promoted to Wing Commander, and he had been awarded the Distinguished Service Order and the Distinguished Flying Cross. However, on August 9th, 1941, his aircraft was brought down near Le Touquet in France, having apparently collided with a Messerschmitt ME-109. Recent research has cast doubt on the original version of events, suggesting that he was most probably the victim of friendly fire after becoming separated from his squadron. Bader's artificial limbs saved his life. His legs became trapped in the cockpit, and had he not been able to detach them, he would most probably have died, unable to bail out of his Spitfire. In spite of the help received by a French farmer who hid Bader in his barn and the French resistance, Douglas Bader was captured and became a prisoner of war. Ironically, his captors held the fighter ace in high regard and even guaranteed safe passage to an aircraft that dropped in replacement prosthetic legs for him. The bomber, which made the delivery, proceeded onward to a bombing mission. In characteristic style, and with the help of the French resistance, Bader escaped from the hospital where he was being treated. He was recaptured a few days later. After several further escape attempts from different prisoners of war camps, he was moved to Colditz, where he remained until it was liberated by the Americans in April 1945. After the war, Douglas Bader became the commander of the Central Fighter Establishment at his former base in Tangmere. Later in 1945, he became the commander of Fighter Commander's Essex Sector in 11 Group at North Weald. During his time at North Weald, Bader organised and led the Victory Flypass over London on September 15, 1945, and he flew in a jet fighter, a Gloucester Meteor. He retired from the RAF in July 1946 with the rank of Group Captain. Now a civilian, Bader joined Shell, his old company, who gave him an aeroplane for business trips on their behalf. He made trips to Europe, Africa and the United States. In 1947, he was honoured by France, being made a Chevalier de Légion d'Honneur and awarded the Croix de Guerre with Palm. Bader's wife, Thelma, died in 1971, and in 1973, he married Joan Murray. In 1976, he was knighted for his work on behalf of disabled people, working tirelessly for a number of charities, including the British Limbless Ex-Servicemen's Association. A CBE had previously been conferred on him in 1956, also for services to the disabled. Douglas Bader died on September 5, 1982, and the Douglas Bader Foundation was established shortly afterwards to advocate the cause of disabled persons and to provide grant monies for projects to assist them. Douglas Bader's life and legacy has recently been commemorated with the unveiling of an English Heritage Blue plaque at a house in Kensington, which was for 30 years his home. Bader was an exceptionally talented airman whose spirit seems to exemplify the struggle of the Battle of Britain and the Second World War. He could be a difficult person to get along with, and of course he took many risks in his life. He was also prepared to live with the consequences of his actions, and was respected and admired by those who served under his command. And famously, of course, he was not prepared to let disability overcome him, and achieved a great deal to embody that quality in others. The British Limbless Ex-Service Men's Association is the national charity for limbless serving and ex-service men and women and their dependents and widows. Their website is www.blesma.org. The Douglas Bader Foundation exists to advance and promote the physical, mental, and spiritual welfare of persons who are without one or more limbs or otherwise physically disabled. Their website is www.douglasbaderfoundation.co.uk. Yeah, it's been a privilege being able to let you know a bit about Douglas Bader. As a young man, I used to steal his legs. He was best friends of my aunt and used to sit by the mill pond. I can always remember this very strong two-armed man dragging himself across the lawn after me to grab me and grab his legs back. Anyway, very special person, somebody that all of us young people after the war looked up to and respected, and was a great hero of mine.
That was a podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum's Battle of Britain series. If you would like to learn more about the history of the Battle of Britain, why not visit the museum's Battle of Britain Hall in London, which houses the world's most comprehensive collection of aircraft that fought in the battle. The hall is open daily from 12 noon to 6 p.m.